is what it is, he said with a snarl.
I mean, that's part of figuring this out. I'm trying to set up video for the first time. I have it just on me. I have the portable battery. I have the lights. I thought I had it all.
And all you got was a dead camera?
I have a dummy battery. It's like a special battery that you buy. It's not that it's not bright. That you buy that allows you just to plug it into a wall or a USB socket. Not my power bank, apparently.
Something, something. The more cords you add.
Tell me the rest.
Yeah. Something, something. The more things are likely to go wrong.
Yeah. Next time.
Next time. It's a good attitude. Growth mindset.
I think that'll lead us into today's show.
Yeah, I'm stoked to hear what you are bringing to share because you've kept your notes hidden secret away in your notebook.
And you have some hidden notes for me too.
Only after I told you, don't look, don't look.
It worked.
I'm Hunter Pence and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we don't count. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. One of the best features, Mark, in Fox in the Forest is the scoring system, particularly the catch-up mechanic with the tie rule. The game ends when a player gets to 21 points. However, in the final round, if both players reach 21, the winning player is the player who scored the most points in that round. I really like that. So you could be down 14 to 20 and still pull off a Hail Mary win, which I would have done, but I don't count. I'm playing Jeff, who lifetime, I'm currently 0-15 in all games ever played against them. I had him. I was going to get 7 points in the final round, hit 21, and win on the tiebreaker. But for reasons, Mark, I still cannot explain more than a week later, I allowed him to win a trick and a card, thinking it didn't matter. Just like, oh, that's fine. He can have that one. I'm going to take the rest of them the rest of the way out. Well, I could have taken that one too. I just didn't count. That was the difference between winning 6 tricks for 3 points or 7 tricks for 6 points.
So you missed hitting 21 and that's how you lost.
That's right.
Hurts.
And I actually had a fun conversation with its designer, Joshua Bergel, on Blue Sky. He was posting images, Mark, of the early drafts of Fox in the Forest, and it was nothing like what the game currently is. Like, I couldn't find a thing other than they were cards. So that evolution of how that game came about is really interesting. How do you feel about my misplay?
I feel like that's part of the game. That's a little bit of the feeling you chase, right? Like, when I think of Fox, right, I think of, dare I say, tricksters. But it's a clever animal. And so if you're positioning yourself, am I the fox or am I
the forest,
the pheasant,
yeah,
the thing being hunted? I think those kinds of errors, while not necessarily like flavorful in the game, are flavorful in the headcanon that I play with.
Made worse by playing against Jeff.
Since we know you can't count when you're playing games, or more accurately, you don't count when you're playing games, I'd say a different kind of scorecards have come in. And we're lucky today to get to talk about feedback from the new avenues that we've been able to explore to increase the variety of feedback that we've gotten about Under One Sky.
Yes. And so today we're going to give you feedback that we got from our very first ever blind playtest. And we got our judges' scores back from Cardboard Edison. But before we do, this week's episode is brought to you by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. In a recent video, they talked about the top 5 accessories in 2025. And since we're just coming off our components episode, Mark, you have to check that video out because they have a custom wooden Splendor board that spins. It has a Lazy Susan underneath it. For the one-off game you want to make for Under One Sky, I think you would think that's pretty cool. We're going to have to make friends with Board Game Casual's friend, Andy. You never know what you're going to find over there. Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube, at Board Game Casual channel.
I'd like to introduce you to this concept called landed cost.
Well done.
Or you could like spin away as like the villain at the end of the movie. I need that in a Board Game Casual video. They're spinning on their Lazy Susan and they just spin landed cost and they pet their like cardboard animal. I'm a writer, not a videographer, right?
Sure.
But I will check out that video and you all should too.
You're a marketeer. Marketeer? Did you see what I did?
It's good. Maybe.
It's impromptu too.
From the top of your head to the front of my mind, tell me about the thing.
Yes, the thing. The primary thing that we're going to talk about today is our Golden Gate Game Makers meetup at the Guild House in San Jose. Mark, this was the place that we went last year when we attended Games Market West. Now, I hadn't seen it. Inside the guild house, there were people, I don't know what they were playing. They were playing like some adult version of Mario Brawl, Super Smash Brothers. I don't know what game it was. They were running a tournament. They were streaming it. They were commentating on it. In another room, they were running like the Mystery Science 3000, where you watch a movie, but you shout stuff out. And then there were people sitting and playing board games and having drinks and some food. And then in the front part of the store, the Golden Gate Game Makers had several tables. We've gone to events here close to San Francisco at the Dog Patch and Victory Point Cafe. And we've been hosting one with Greg Poole on the last Monday of every month online to talk about building your game online. This event was so great because they had a lot of foot traffic. People coming in to play our game weren't necessarily there for the meetup. They were just walking down the street and they're like, oh, what's going on in there? And so people just walked in and said hello and came up and started playing games with us.
Tell me a little bit more, because the meetups that we've gone to more locally here in the Bay have been designer events where you go, you sit down, you teach the game to somebody, they play, they give you feedback, then you go play other people's games. It sounds like you're describing something pretty different.
Well, I wouldn't say it was dramatically different in that the expectation is you play other people's games when you're there. And I tried to set down my, my table stand that was looking for players to go play other games. The biggest difference was the people playing the games weren't all game designers. I feel like the events that I've went to at Dog Patch were exclusively people that are designing games. There's been a couple of playtesters there, but they were coming specifically to playtest. It was just so interesting to have people who are just coming off the street. Presumably people that play games. You wouldn't come off the street if you didn't play games and walk into, a big establishment like that and start playing games. But the most important thing was I went there with the goal of doing a blind playtest. And now that can be a big ask. And I've listened to and I've read other designers say sometimes that you don't want to do that at the type of event that I went to. Now, our game isn't a 90-minute play with a 24-page rule book. It's 3 pages, pretty big font. It is a 15-minute game to play. It's a 5-minute teach for us. So I didn't think it was unreasonable to have people blind playtest our game. I would have been happy with one blind playtest. The drive to San Jose would have been worth it. Our drive, no problem. They get one blind playtest. I got 3. You said stoked earlier. I was stoked.
Well, then let's dive in. Tell me what your takeaways are, because I haven't seen. You didn't let me read.
Blind. You're coming in blind.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, so I have, it is funny though, because I have all of this information I have not shared with you, and it's awesome information. It's cool. So I should say first, I was really happy with the feedback that we got. I will say that my note-taking, I need to do a better job of taking notes. I felt, and I had the time to do it, and I just I rushed myself when I was standing over people and I was watching them play. I don't know if I've ever done a blind playtest for somebody else and had them, lingering over me and looking down at me and taking notes. The fact that people were willing to let me do that, I was so appreciative of. What I'm gonna do is, for each playtest, I'm just gonna read you my notes.
Because I wasn't there, tell me how you pitched the blind playtest and how you set it up with your players.
I took everything out of my box. We don't have an official box yet, but I took everything out and I put the grid, the board on the table. I put the wild tile in the center and I explained why. And then I just left all the tiles in the bag. I put out the 3 constellations. I put out the 3 star charts and the 9 constellations in a pile. And what I said to them was, I want you to imagine you just open the box. You've taken all the components out. Here is the rule book. I'm not going to intervene. It's like I'm not here. I will only jump in if something I see breaks the game, where I feel like the game, the outcome, the result, what's happening is not at all what we want. But that was what I said. Here's the rule book. Here are the pieces. Play the game. The first thing I noticed when Katie and Nick opened up the rule book was, we need to label star chart. We have star chart written in the rule book and they immediately go, which one's the star chart? Is it the constellation card that only has 1? To us, again, obvious, right? Chart would have more things on it. Constellation would just be a singular, but absolutely we need the right star chart on the star chart somewhere. We should probably label constellation somewhere as well, or putting pictures in the rule book. They selected the purple star chart to play with and I was happy with that. But then what they did was they shuffled all 9 constellations. So in the rules, it says to choose one of the star charts and then take take the matching constellations and shuffle them. They didn't take the matching constellations. And it says take the matching constellations and shuffle them and deal those, but they didn't. They put them all together. So all nine constellations. Now, what happened was it just so happened to be two purple ones were on top. So they passed the purple one out and then the other purple one. And so I didn't have to say anything because they randomly set up the game correctly. They picked the purple star chart and they picked the purple constellations for themselves.
I have a question. Maybe they told you this in the feedback, but I'm not seeing it in your notes. Did they say whether they felt like it was a misreading or something that was unclear in the rulebook?
Misreading. So they did eventually catch it. They kept reading during setup and they learned that they should have only taken the three matching constellations. And it was so cool to see. First time ever to have somebody, you know, you wrote a rule, you want it to happen a specific way. They miss it, but then they go back and catch it. It was neat. The next note is this is the quote from them. Red line means, do you know what this does? And they didn't really talk a lot about orientation, but they actually figured out how to set up the star chart with the constellations in your hand. They matched the red bar. And interestingly, like, there wasn't a lot of conversation. The other groups had a lot of conversations about how to do it. They did it correctly, almost intuitively. So at first I was like, how do they do that? We're geniuses. We wrote great rules. We just got lucky with the first group, but it's going to be the thing that we're going to talk about later.
I think that's something we flagged in our submission to Cardboard Edison as the language around the orientation needs more feedback and edits, right?
Yeah, definitely. So they Rochambeau to go first. At the 9-minute mark, they made their first move. So it took them 9 minutes to read the rules and say, I think we know how to play. This is the first time you're hearing that. Does that seem right? Does that seem too long? Not for what they did, but for where we want the game to be.
I'm not sure. Did you time the other players?
Yes.
Let's talk about it after then.
Okay. On the very first placement, this was the time where I had to think about Randy O'Connor coming into the podcast and talking about doing playtests and being there to listen and to watch, just let people make mistakes. On the very first placement, they had a misunderstanding of how the game worked. And the player placed a blue tile and they can place it in any open spot. And then they took its effect. So they set it down and then they took the effect. The effects only apply to the surrounding tiles. It doesn't apply to itself, but it's not game breaking. I didn't say anything because in reality, you can set that blue piece wherever you want. So maybe the player was just changing their mind and moving it over. But I realized through discussion that they thought that they were interacting with itself. They were picking a spot and then moving it orthogonally.
Outside of the first move, did they ever make a move that was that same move where I place my tile and move the tile that I placed?
Yeah. Next note, they caught it. Again, pretty cool to see. They started talking about, does self equal surrounding? They read the rules and they realized it doesn't affect itself. I did have to step in a few turns later though, for the first time when they got confused with surrounding versus adjacent. And I asked them, and I hope it wasn't patronizing in any way. I said, where in the rule book does it say adjacent? Because we deliberately did not include the word adjacent in the rule book anywhere. Surrounding is our term that we're using. And we have a picture of surrounding. And once they looked at the rule book, they figured it out. Because they were only at first, they were only going to move adjacent tiles. So the four tiles that are touching it on the 90 degrees.
I'm thinking back to all of the reasons where we were having arguments about what does adjacent mean? Does it include the diagonals? Does it not include the diagonals? I suppose it's validating to hear that surrounding was better descriptive language. Also a little bit disappointing that it sounds like it didn't carry the meaning into the rule book that was like glaringly apparent enough on reading of the rules.
Right.
Because surrounding is not a word that I've always loved and I begrudgingly relinquished adjacent.
So that's a theme. It comes up a couple of times. And even in notes I got later about the rule book was finding a way to kind of pop that out a bit more. I took a note during the game, Katie accidentally knocked over her standee and revealed her pattern, but Nick didn't see it in time. She was able to kind of cover it up. Something we should be mindful of. And I think they had said, we don't even need a standee. I really like the standee. I like having it up in front of me. I don't want to have to keep putting it down, looking.
But you don't have to keep putting it down and looking because you have the star chart to refer to.
Yeah, I know, but I like having a thing in my hand and we're going to write the name on it. I think it just has a nice look. The feedback was a weighted standee, something with a little bit more weight.
I'm on team take it away.
Land. I thought you were going to say landed gust.
I was thinking about it, but
they used the rule book as a cheat sheet because it had the movements in it, which I thought was smart. And they talked afterwards about having a player aid.
And we had one at Gen Con.
We did. The game ended at the 19th 19-minute mark. So that was pretty cool. First tile placed at 9. The game ended at the 19-minute mark. It was a 10-minute play. That's in our range. We're saying it's a 15-minute game. So from reading the rules to playing to finishing, 19 minutes. It's pretty good.
I think that's perfect.
You know, they questioned components up front in the rule book. We should look at more rule books and see whether or not that's something that's standard. They just felt like, oh, I don't need a list of components right away. I want to know more valuable information. They said something you're going to like, move additional rules above winning. Initially, when you created the rule book, that was higher. So I thought you would like that note. Feedback overall, very positive. They had a great time. Katie wants to play again.
I'm thinking back to Katie and Nick. So I'm earmarking the language around surrounding tile and the language around the orientation bar.
Those were the big ones. I'd throw a weighted standee in there. I think it's important, but
I'd throw away the standee, so I don't think it's important.
Well played.
Take me into group two.
Sawyer and Dan. The first note I have for Sawyer and Dan is teal. There were confusion over the colors. It didn't help that the teal cards that I have printed actually have a light green backing on it. So that one was me. But teal is going to come up again in the next one as well. One of their first notes when they were setting up the game was, do I put the tile in the shared pool up or down? And that was interesting because we've never thought about that because it only has a picture on one side. It is all one color, like it's, you know, the tile is all blue, but then has a picture on top. And they were wondering if they put it face down in the shared pool. They flipped the tile up in the air like a coin to decide who goes first.
Oh, that's a cool way of doing it.
Now, they had more conversations about orientation than the other group. And I stayed quiet. I listened. At one point, they said, because you can rotate, orientation matters. They also said, this is confusing to me. And then Sawyer figured it out at the 5:55 mark. So right at about the 6-minute mark, he had it figured out, but it didn't quite make it to Dan. And so they weren't setting it up correctly. They recommended a picture in the rule book of setup to show it as an example. That's probably a good idea. Now, they did eventually figure it out, but they played with their star chart horizontal to the board instead of vertical. They matched the red bar correctly in their hand. They turned the patterns to match. So they turned and played sideways. It's not the way we intended. We intended that the star chart would be vertical two ways. You can have it facing one player, or you can turn the red bar and have it facing the other player. That was initially how I had imagined it when I created it as a vertical bar.
Once you recognize that the orientation matters, you have to allow for all the orientations. So I think it's fine that they did it that way. And I would argue that that's a valid way to play. And you would get different names on your cards for your social media campaign.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. Maybe it opens up the replayability a lot, that instead of designing it the way that I was thinking about it, where it just plays, you know, in two orientations, maybe we design the star chart to be rotated in any direction and played however you want. I think it does really raise the replayability because this one pattern that we have can now be played with four different ways. And so you're not always building. I wonder how that plays in, like you said, with naming the card, because I really like naming the card. Now, we can't have four spots on the card that can be named based on its orientation. I think that'll just be a messy card. I don't know if that'll look good, but a conversation for later.
Yeah, I think it points to, because we're also going to have to think about when we're labeling the star chart and the constellations, I think it's worth thinking about, do we label it on the part of the pattern where you see it, or do you label it on the back? I think there are elements of the graphic design of the cards that we just haven't thought about yet.
At the 8:20 mark, they placed their first tile. So they read the rules. They were ready to play. They gave me some great quotes in this game. I already sent one out on Blue Sky. They said, rotation makes us hard. You know, that moment when you realize the board rotates for the first time. And the quote from one of the players was, oh, good God. And then they said that you have to predict 90 degrees away if you want to win with yellow. They realized that in order to ever win with yellow as the placement and action, you would have to see it from 90 degrees away. And we know from playing the game many times, we play the game trying to set up the 270 win. Like, we're thinking three rotations ahead. New players are not doing that, but new players are. And I actually encourage new players to do that when they first play it. Just try to build your pattern. The game ended at 18 minutes and 16 seconds. I'm exact in my notes. So again, same, you know, they read the rules and played it in under 18 minutes.
Means the game was about 10 minutes. The actual playing of the game was about 10 minutes.
Right. And this one was a little bit more interesting to watch because one player had a really strong grasp of the game and they were always playing a couple of moves ahead. And the other player was kind of playing to the board. Although they mentioned, you know, the reason they had that advantage was they watched a little bit of the previous game. So they did have like some sense of, you know, what they were doing, more so than the other player did. One of the notes there was the wild tile needs more distinction.
Another thing to think about. I think what I have heard so far is it sounds to me like the rulebook is actually very successful in getting people to play the game correctly, generally.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, outside of, you know, lining up the star chart, I think everything else does make sense. You know, in this game, there was an interesting conversation. We wrote in the notes, place it on an empty space. This is what you do on your turn. Place it on an empty space. Complete its action if a legal move is available. They went back to that a couple of times, players, and said, is that must? Does that mean must? We have to be a little clearer. I thought that was a good note. They did figure it out.
Sure. I'm not trying to say the rulebook is done. I think there are like significant things that need to change. But as a first draft, I think it's reasonably successful. But the other step of that is we really, and Scott did an amazing job, but we as like designing and having vision for what the rulebook needs in it, it has become clear to me that we have overlooked the visual elements that are required to make a rulebook abundantly clear.
100%. We're hoping that's an area where Mark is going to be able to help us. Mark Gagne.
Oh, good. We need some good eyes.
The last playtesters were Russell and Matthew. They were hilarious. They sat down the way I would, where I would give you the rule book and I'd be like, you read the rules. I'm just going to like set up the pieces. Because I am not a rule book person. You give me a rule book to read for a game, I don't understand. I couldn't figure out how to play Sky Team. I couldn't figure out how to play Splendor Duel recently. Rule books don't make sense to me. I played Innovation wrong for like 2 years. I'm not a rule book person. I'm just bad with it. So one of them just sat down and looked at the rule book. The other person started pulling out the tiles. It was funny. They counted all the tiles, then they separated them all by color, and then they realized they didn't have to do any of that. They put them all back in the bag. Teal again. Teal came up. They had a discrepancy about which one was teal and what teal is, and so we know to stay away from teal as a color. They did select it. We'll talk about the teal card at the end and why that was different than the purple card that was. This group struggled the most with setting up the orientation and had the biggest conversation about how to line up their red bar and what that meant. They understood most everything else, but I did have to step in because they set up their star chart. They set it up sideways again, but they didn't match their red bar to it. So they had it in a way that made sense to them. I did have to step in once they were about to place their first tile. I waited, and I did that many times. I waited and I waited and I waited. And most times I didn't have to step in because they figured something out. But I did step in and I explained it and I apologized. And I said, this is on us. We have to figure out how to explain this better. So they placed their first tile at the 10-minute mark because it took them a little bit longer on setting up the constellations. They were funny. They were bantering with each other. They missed lethal. Can we call it lethal in this game?
No.
They missed lethal several times.
It really kills the two friends like hanging out, having a nice time together vibe.
Well, we're going to talk about this. We're going to kill the friendly too. So this game ends at 21 minutes, 50 seconds. Again, they played in about 10 minutes. Pretty good.
Nice.
This game went deep. I was worried we were going to get to the first draw, but no draw. And the winner, they won with the card that I always call the backwards Y, but they saw it as a tree branch. I thought that was neat. So they called it branch.
I've been seeing ghosts for about a week, but I just had a very strange moment where I see the backwards Y, or what they've called branch, looks a lot like the microscope right now, but I'm not looking at the microscope directly. They break differently.
They break differently, but still challenging to read.
Well, it's fun that your prototype is getting filled out. After hearing all three playtest notes, it sounds to me like those things that we've already talked about, the rulebook edits to refine the language, and then more supportive visual design with visual aids, are kind of the two big things that come away from this, which seems like a great spot to be when I think that's the thing that this style of playtesting serves best, right? It's going to inform how effective are those elements. And if those elements aren't where we want them to be, I think these playtests have pointed us in a direction that lets us focus the work on the revisions for the rulebook and the visual aids going forward.
So if that's all there was, Mark, I was, like I said, I was stoked. But I also had the opportunity to have Jordan, who was the Golden Gate Game Maker, organizer for this event, go over our rule book. And even better, he had not played the game. He had not really seen the game played. And, you know, he even said to me, you know, look, this may not be right. This is just how I feel. This is my experience looking at your rule book. Right away, I have a note for you, Mark. He did not like the word friendly in our little subtitle, where it says, a friendly race to find your constellation in the ever-changing night sky. He was like, I don't like it. I don't know why. I don't like it. And I was like, cool. Great feedback. I liked it.
That's because you want the game to be a violent, hostile takeover of the night sky.
I'm trying to get lethal on the board. I took a picture and I put it on Blue Sky, but he went through the whole rule book with a pen and made suggestions and talked to me about his advice. He talked about having more pictures, especially around, you know, the components. He had a note by Shared Pool. He says, it sounds unspecific. Theme it. Don't call it Shared Pool. That's not in the sky. You know, what could this be within the theme of the game? He talked about the star tile movement pictures could be clearer. He wasn't sure which was the place tile in the picture. So he didn't understand the movement if you don't know which tile is coming down. That was a really great note. And his biggest one for us was to be a lot more specific in places. And that's all through the rule book where, you know, we might say place it. He's like, what is it? And I was like, oh, okay. You know, so there were a lot of little catches like that. So I was really happy to get Jordan's feedback. And the whole way home on the drive, in addition to being
thrilled,
stoked.
Oh, I was so close.
I was thinking about Jordan's game that I got to play as well that I really liked. And I sent him some ideas for his game. I don't know if he's going to use it, but 10 of 10 blind playtest, like so great. We needed it. That was the first, I can't believe we went this long without blind playtests.
I think it fits in terms of where we were though, and where we are though, because we didn't have a rule book that was complete enough that we could have asked people to do it until Cardboard Edison was submitted.
That's the other thing. Nice transition. You talk, Mark, I can't.
I was going to say, I want to kick the elephant out of the room first. So you get 30 seconds to be upset, and then we're going to put on our growth mindset hats and we're going to go through some of the feedback from Cardboard Edison. It was like astoundingly positive. And I have a theory for you that'll make you feel better.
When does my 30 seconds start?
Ready, set, go.
We didn't become finalists. We weren't selected to be finalists. I got the email, was excited. I opened it. We weren't selected to be finalists. Now, there were 390 people who entered. The odds of being finalists are incredibly low. Our Kickstarter campaign is dead in the water.
It hasn't even started yet.
You were giving me 30 seconds to be sad. I really wanted to be finalists. And, you know, as much as I say, oh, it's about the feedback. We're going to get feedback. That's great. I wanted to not win, but I wanted to be a finalist. And I think it's okay to be sad that I wasn't. In the grand scheme of things, does it matter? Yes. I still have 30 seconds, right? How much time do I have left? I'm sad.
I'll give you a little extra time because I hear how you're feeling. It's okay to feel that way.
We worked hard. Scott worked really hard on the video editing, on the rule book. I thought we were well positioned. I liked our chances.
Do you want my theory that'll make you feel better?
Yes.
I looked through the finalists. I didn't watch all the videos yet.
They all paid money to get there?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be a conspiracy theory.
Didn't we pay money to get there?
Technically we did. We all paid money. That's right. We all did. Go on.
I looked at the descriptions of the finalists.
I haven't even read the feedback fully because I was so bummed. Sent you the message and then you told me, don't read it. And I was like, okay.
I read the descriptions of the finalists. I think those finalists were more thorough and detailed in their execution of the assignment. The assignment was to have a deeply flavored game.
You said you were going to make me feel better. You just told me I didn't do a good enough job.
No, I think because you haven't read the feedback, I think these are separate things. I think the feedback that we got is actually incredibly uplifting. I do not think our game was a good fit because of the complexities and discussions we've had around the theme for our game. I think the light touch of theme that we had was a detractor for being a good fit for what this contest was. And to get the feedback that we got within those constraints, I think is really supportive.
You are not lifting me up.
I did the best I could. I was trying to give you the excuse theory of, oh, well, yeah, we're just not a good fit. It's like when you don't get a job that you want. It wasn't me. It was them. Strengths from the feedback that we got. Because the feedback was like very genuine and I found it really uplifting to read.
How many judges reviewed our game?
Five.
Are there scores?
There are scores. Five judges reviewed our game on a score of 1 to 7 for scale.
7 is the best?
7 is the best.
Why not 10?
No idea.
I got feedback to give. Okay. A sliding scale to 7.
Dry your salty tears.
Okay. I'm just mad.
The three categories that we knew about were engagement. We got a 6 out of 7 in engagement.
We got a 6?
Yeah.
That's good. 6 is good.
Originality of theme, we got an average of 5.8.
Okay.
And in originality of mechanics, we also got an average of 5.8.
I mean, out of 7, I think I kind of agree with that. I mean, actually, it's really good. 5.8 out of 7 on theme and originality of mechanics, when I don't think our mechanics are necessarily original in themselves.
Well, you haven't read the feedback yet. And the feedback did not only kind of say what they thought was original about the mechanics, but were like very specific in speaking about the originality of the mechanics in the way they're positioned to other games that would be in this space.
Okay.
Strengths from the feedback. They were asked to give strengths, weaknesses, other concerns about mechanics, and then any additional comments. So for our aggregation, I pulled strengths, I pulled weaknesses, I pulled needs as a possible other category, and then other things that didn't meet either of those, other things that might not have met any of those categories. Strengths for the game. And the reason I think this is the one to kind of like hang your hat on and be really proud of, because I think this is one of the things that we thought about most intentionally and got specific meaningful feedback that we met kind of our like design vision. The first thing that really stood out to me was a judge said, I like what looks to be a positive complexity, medium to low complexity, to strategic depth, medium to high strategic depth ratio. And that was what we were aiming for.
We spent a lot of time trying to achieve that, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
That's good feedback.
Another judge highlighted the rotation as being a really unique feature of the game, and that taking advantage of player perspective is a good way of standing out from other abstract strategy games. And then the last one was kind of a reiteration of an appreciation of the simplicity and elegance of the rules and mechanics. They like the, I place a tile, I affect or rotate the board, and you try not to tip out your intentions to your opponent.
Again, deliberate. I mean, when we were thinking about the moves that the tiles could have, the moves that we eventually kind of settled on, we did it because this is simple. This is clean. That's good.
Yeah. I think nice notes on the strengths of the game. Weaknesses. This main weakness that was pointed out more than once was there was concern from some of the judges about, I really liked the language, of falling into the trap of apathetic familiarity. People are going to get bored because there's not enough patterns to keep the game interesting.
That's interesting. The first question I would want to ask one of those judges is, how many patterns do you think are currently in the game? Because if they think there's only 3, because maybe that's just what you see in the pictures, 1 star chart and 3 patterns, and you don't look closely at the rules. So do they think it's 3 or do they think it's 9 and 3 different ways you can play the game? We said it on this episode already, the easy, medium, and hard way. Then within that, we've talked about, and we didn't talk about it in Cardboard Edison, but we've been talking about it, that it's possible that you could end up playing each card 4 different ways. So there's 12 different ways to play within 1 star chart. So 48 different possible constellations you could build in this game. In a 3x3 grid, we can't put more than what we have right now, though. We know that. It's possible you could squeeze in a 4th constellation. We'd have to go back to doing math again or change the parameters of what we think is okay. Because, you know, the one thing that won't be clear to people, especially judges who are looking at this, they don't know how much work went into trying to figure out how you group these together, that it's deliberate, the shapes that are together, and that there's never more than 3 overlapping coordinates on the grid with any of the other constellations. And that took a lot of work to figure out how to do that. That doesn't get noticed. That goes back to, we could have explained that.
I don't know that there's a world where you can explain that within the constraints of what the competition is, but if it helps you feel better.
Thanks. You're so good at making me feel better. What's your opinion on that? Saying there's not enough patterns in the game.
We'd have to go back and look, but I'm not sure what I think about it. Like, I haven't gotten bored of the game with only the 9 patterns that are available in the 3 groups that there are. I wouldn't say no to changing the criteria to allow us to have more patterns, because I think there are really cool looking options that aren't in the game right now because of those constraints. I think it's worth going back and having that be one of the things that we go back, since I don't think we should just give up and be like, the game is done, and so now all we're doing is marketing and research and components and rulebook and everything else.
It's in the roadmap. A big thing for us to figure out this month was, which 9 patterns do we want? 3 star charts for sure do we want? Because we've talked about that. The bow, for example, is not in the game. We really like the one we call the bow. We want that in the game. In order to do that, it's really challenging to move, because we just got it to work finally with 9 different patterns where they don't overlap on the cards. So yeah, for sure. But like you said, we'd have to change the parameters, I think, if we were going to expand. And maybe that opens the door for, you know, our add-on packs you can buy in the future.
No.
Okay. No. You've already shot that idea down. I mean, in a year, it would be cool if you come out with one pack you can buy for $5, right? Fits in the box still.
I think that's a very appropriate thing to do if you're running a board game design company business. It is not something that I would want to do with my games.
You have a Misplay coaster under your tee.
Yes.
Pick it up.
Uh-huh.
Pick it up. The logo's on one side. Mm-hmm. Read the other side, please.
Oh, a podcast about making a company, making a board game.
That's why we stopped using it, a podcast about making a board game company.
I just dislike the serialization effect of, I made my game and now I release more and now I release more.
I'm with you. And when we talk later about Kickstarter, a part of me just wants one version of the game. This is the game. You buy this.
I think you could relax the criteria in a way that allows us to expand the number of patterns if we decided that having more than 9 patterns is something that's important, or maybe more than 3 star charts.
Have to iron it out. What were some other comments or highlights or things that stood out to you?
I think the cool one was, and there was a minute where you were talking about Game Market West, and I was like, oh, we really should have thought about maybe the lockpicking theme a little bit more. Now, I would still just kill theme dead.
Get out of my house right now. Take your stuff and go.
But one person pointed to kind of like the AI machine learning thing, because they were like, oh, this game gets more interesting as you play it more often because you develop a higher level of like strategic understanding. The game becomes more complex over time and more interesting for players who are going to invest in playing it.
Yeah. That's great. They saw that.
This was an interesting one too. One of the other really interesting pieces was, oh, I could teach this to young gamers. It was interesting that somebody was like, oh, this is a good like learner game for younger gamers.
Yeah. I wonder, I think the rules are simple enough to learn, but I wonder how much of that, like the other judge was saying, how much of the strategy they'll be able to figure out and develop.
Another thing that we've kicked around talking about and thinking about was, a judge shared I wouldn't call it a weakness, but a concern of the decision paralysis. They called it analysis paralysis. Is this game enough, deep enough, compelling enough to be interested in thinking 3 moves ahead? And if I'm not interested in that, do I still want to play this game?
That's totally fair. And we thought a lot about that too. They would have hated stacking. They would not have liked stacking. But I think we have done a good job of trying to reduce that, despite I'm So Bad's objections. You and I, or maybe me more, have definitely tried to simplify the game.
There were a couple of judges that gave us contact information that I think we should reach out to. The thing that kind of like raised my hackles a little bit, if you're like, I'll join you in feeling bummed for a minute, is there was a comment that was something along the lines of like, I think there's a really interesting and compelling core to this game and probably plays fine and could be great with some more experimentation and development work. And I was like, go on. But like with my hands on my hips, not the nice like joking one, but like the okay. And
yeah,
I would have loved more explicit feedback from that judge.
Yeah. Is that one of the judges that left their email?
Yes.
Oh, we could ask that question. It's funny because and maybe that's outside of the scope of Cardboard Edison and they don't do that. We provided a link to our playing cards room so anyone could have played the game. They could have tested it out, could have played it with somebody. But I think that probably is beyond what you're supposed to do for this round of Cardboard Edison. The next round, which we didn't get into, you send in your prototype for them to play. You know, there's one note that I see you have here, Mark. It says, additionally, there's only 3 possible types of tiles to play, yet there's a tableau of 4 to choose from. When it seems it's almost identical to let you play whatever you want, My preference would be you always draw from the bag and play a random tile. Interesting feedback.
We've played a version like that.
We have. We've done it. We know it's anytime, you know, I worry about the feedback that I gave Jordan for his game, in that he's played the game, whatever it is, 25, 50, 100 times. He's probably tried the things that I suggested. And, you know, when somebody, people have told us so many times things that we've already, why don't you have that tile swap? That would be really cool. Instead of rotating the board, it should swap. Well, we just happen to know swapping is incredibly powerful. It's OP. So that's why it's not in the game. But I have wondered, is four the right number? I know five is not. Five, we did the math. You know, the probability of always having the color available to you with five is like, I forget what the number is, but it's like 87%. You're almost always going to be able to choose. Four brought that number down to around, I think it was just over 50%. Going to three really reduces it. And there will be lots of times, I think, where you'd go to the bag versus what's... I think that feedback is totally valid. And it could be a thing that maybe we could explore more. We run a test with three versus a test with four. But we know we wouldn't want to play random.
You went off in a very different direction than I did, because they were talking about like threes and fours. And there's three this and three
my
that.
My OCD,
like,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, there's just a... There is an aesthetic quality too.
Yeah.
What if we go down to three and then everything is
three? Everything is three. Three star charts, three constellations, three different tiles, three things in the shared sky, whatever we call it. Now I'm convinced.
But then you can't go up to a fourth star chart.
Till the expansion comes out. Then there's four tiles. We introduce a new tile. Profit. We're a board game company, Mark.
Get out of my house. Take your things. Get out of my studio. This is my bed.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by...
No. Before we go, for real though, I have a business question for you.
Okay. Has Cardboard Edison sunk us? Yes, absolutely.
When you go and read the feedback...
Yes, I still have to thoroughly do that.
I think Cardboard Edison points us to a question that we continually kick the can down the road from. Who is our audience? Because I think having had an answer to that question, I don't know or believe that it would have changed our positioning in the contest, because I think I believe in my theme argument. I don't think the theme of our game sufficiently stands up in comparison to how deeply embedded theme is in the other games. But
you brought the theme to the game. This was your theme.
Never.
You came back from Gen Con talking about two kids looking up into the night sky.
If you wanted a theme. I came back from Gen Con saying they should be like beautifully varnished wood pieces and just have three different color woods.
Go on.
But I do think that the feedback from Cardboard Edison points to the question of, well, who is this game for? And it is a question we have not talked about. It's a question that we haven't grappled with. And we've just kind of shrug emojied and been like, well, we're going to do Cardboard Edison.
Three episodes out, maybe four.
Add it to the roadmap.
I'm going to put it on the roadmap for shows. Yeah. Katie's our audience. Katie was wonderful. She's going to support our Kickstarter.
Let's go.
So
one of one. She wins the deluxe version with the Lazy Susan and the resin pieces and the beautiful board.
That might be legally binding. Be careful. I don't know.
We haven't put in anything in writing.
That doesn't matter. Yeah.
Absolutely matters.
We got to call the lawyer.
What's next?
That's season one.
But I think it's a really important question to be thinking about, because we have two sets of feedback that we have never gotten this style of feedback for. And so the thing that we do with that feedback, I think, is more important than whether or not we're a finalist in Cardboard Edison.
I don't like to argue with you when you're right. I don't know the answer though. I don't. I can make something up, and we have to sit down and talk about the feedback. We haven't, again, this was blind. You know, you didn't know anything about the blind playtest, and I didn't know anything about the specifics of the feedback other than we didn't get there. We'll have to sit down and talk about it.
I think these two events will point us, will be a good guiding star, will be a good North Star.
Low-hanging fruit.
As we continue our development process for the game, because I think what we're due for is a revisit and some internal playtesting with some of these things in mind. The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Howley Boy Games. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. We express our humble gratitude and recognize any level of support here on our list of sponsors. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors.
Drive home, stoked. We're going to have to edit this podcast so we're not saying stoked all the time.
Stoked is the new excited.
The new excited.